Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to Overnight America with Ryan Recker on KMOX. Sponsored by Michaels Flooring, the flooring experts. MichaelsFlooringOutlet.com.
And welcome to America. Oh man, what a tough day to drive. Hopefully, if you had the opportunity, you did not have to go out on the roads today. But I mean, it's Monday, it's a work day, and I'm sure there's a lot of people listening right now that have no other choice, that you got to get to work, you got to pick up the kids, you got to go to school, you got to do this, you got to do that, and someone else depends on you. So you have to do it either way, and you found yourself in the car white-knuckling it anywhere you went. I drove around today for a little bit. I noticed that some people were definitely not prepared for this winter blast. You know, we were talking about it, and even last week we talked to AccuWeather about it, and then last night we talked to AccuWeather about it. Originally, they were saying the ground was warm enough that we wouldn't see the accumulations on the pavement, but then last night we got an update from AccuWeather, and Carl Babinski told us, it looks like we're going to get something because, you know, the way that it hits the pavement, it's definitely going to get wet. And when the temperature drops down, it could get slick. And there's going to be those areas, too. So even looking outside of our windows here in downtown St. Louis, you know, I can look at, this is Pine Street, and there's definitely snow on the ground. So it didn't just automatically melt. The sidewalks have snow on it. The grass certainly has some snow. And the cars that were parked and haven't moved also have snow on it. I was not anticipating how difficult it was going to be to travel into work today, because yesterday they said, oh, you know, in the morning, once the sun comes up, it should be warm enough, and then da-da-da-da-da, it won't be until later in the day, and then by the time you start getting into work or driving home or whatever it is, it should be done by then. But that wasn't the case either. When I drove in today, it takes me about 25 minutes to drive in, and it took me about an hour or so today. And I found that we were only moving about 30 or 35 miles an hour. I will say this about St. Louis drivers. We do have some of the worst drivers in the country. But, well, no. When they do the survey, I don't know what they survey, but they say, oh, St. Louis has some great drivers. One of the top three drivers in the country. Not a chance. We have some of the worst drivers in the country. But at least it's organized chaos. I feel like most of the people that drive nuts at least know how to drive nuts effectively. So there might be a bonus to that. But when there's a lot of snow, I've noticed this last year. There was a time when I filled in for Mark Reardon, and it was that giant snowstorm at the end of last year, 2018. I think that's when it was, or maybe it was earlier this year in 2019. I really don't remember. But huge snowstorm. It took people hours to get home, and I thought, oh, this is great. The one day I got to come in early and have to leave during rush hour, and it's already takes long enough to get through all this. Now I got to find myself driving home through that. I found that it still took me only an hour to get home, and when other people were taking, you know, multiple hours. And the reason for that is I feel like most people in St. Louis that drive on the interstates have a pretty good understanding what they can and cannot do. And I will say that outside of the, oh boy, you just lost complete control and slammed into a divider, outside of those moments, I saw some people have some accidents where they got rear-ended or they might have lost control and hit something, but they got to the side of the road quick enough and they corrected themselves that it didn't block the traffic. And I think at least for that sake, if people just realize they slow it down and keep it in orderly fashion, you can get to somewhere in a okay time, even though it's not the best time, but still an okay time. And I do admire that. And that's some of my observations of St. Louis driving during the weather, winter weather, at least now. So we're going to check in with AccuWeather in the show later tonight. And part of checking in with AccuWeather is trying to figure out, okay, we got through today. Was it worse than they expected? I think it is. I think it was worse than expected. But what's going to happen in the next couple of days? And we'll get a rundown of the totals for today and, you know, what we saw, just kind of an understanding for the sake of, hey, maybe I wasn't crazy. It was a lot worse than they were predicting. We're also going to talk to our friend Rich Rubino in a couple of minutes. He has a book called American Politics on the Rocks. We do a Monday conversation with him. We could talk impeachment and the history of that. But in general, I wanted to talk to him about some late contenders that may be popping into the presidential race, including Michael Bloomberg, or how about Hillary Clinton? That'll be interesting. So we can look at that from a historical aspect. What happens when you have a tight race, or at least a, not so much a tight race, but you got a crowded race, and then late bloomers come on in and they decide, this is what we're going to do. We're going to do it now. We're going to get in. I'm sure he's got a couple of things and observations about that. Next hour, too, Brad Young's going to join us from Hairstyle Fisher & Young. I love Brad Young. And I messaged him earlier, and I wanted to ask him some questions about how to, in a court of law, how do we normally handle anonymous, not complaints, but anonymous accusations? And, you know, we have the Sixth Amendment, sure, but during an impeachment trial, that's not really relevant, or is it? Okay, we can talk to him about that next hour. We'll take some of your calls on Don Cherry, the great commentator, the Canadian commentator that does Molson Hockey Night in Canada, at least used to. So he got fired today. And why did he get fired? I'll play the audio that got him fired, too. Lots to get to on the show tonight. It's Overnight America, KMOX. You hear him Mondays on Overnight America, author of American Politics on the Rocks. You can find him online. Rich Rubino, thank you for coming back to KMOX.
Well, you're welcome. Glad to be on again.
I love these segments, so I'm glad that we get to
Indeed.
Do them. Now, if people wanted to look you up online, where can they find your thoughts?
Just go to www.polita-geek.com.
And they can look up American Politics on the Rocks on Amazon. So,
absolutely.
A lot is going to be happening in the United States this week. The thing that I'm going to most dislike, maybe is the right word, is that every single politician is going to get as bombastic as they can in front of that camera this week to get their point out. I'm not looking forward to that. But I was curious your thoughts on a few things that are going on. And we keep seeing the reports of Michael Bloomberg. Is he going to jump into the race? We already have, 10 candidates still viable trying to get that nomination for the Democratic Party.
Oh, more. I would say, well, I mean, if you want to be technical about it, you've got hundreds, because if you include, I mean, I like to get on the New Hampshire ballot for the primary, all you have to give is $1,000, essentially, and you get your name on the ballot. So there are a lot of people that have been able to get their name on the ballot. But if you take only the major candidates, you're down to about 16 or 17.
Wait, there's 1,000 candidates on the ballot. How long is that ballot in New Hampshire?
It's huge. Not 1,000, but there's probably about 200, at least on the Democratic side. And as I say, it's very easy to get your name on the ballot. And there are some people who do it just about every time. It's also very easy to get your name just to be considered a presidential candidate. All you have to do is file a few forms with the Federal Election Commission, and your name's down as a presidential candidate. Now, you're essentially a write-in candidate because it's hard to get on ballot in certain states, certainly in the primaries. It's very hard, but New Hampshire is a very easy state, and it really is true that anybody can essentially run for president.
So you're saying that for $1,000, I can put someone's name on that ballot?
Yes, assuming they meet the requirements of being 35 years of age being the main part. But if you are, in order to get your name on the, in order to just be considered a presidential candidate with the Federal Election Commission, there really aren't any requirements. Now, if you actually were to win and assume the office, then you would have to meet the requirements. But just to get your name on the ballot, I mean, just to get your name, rather, on the Federal Election Commission forms, it's very easy.
I love this idea. That's a lot of money. I don't think my radio station would allow me to spend $1,000 to put someone's name on the ballot just to see what would happen. But Michael Bloomberg, people are really wondering if he has what it takes, and he's jumping in a little bit later than everyone else. What does that mean when you have a candidate that jumps in a little late?
Usually the candidate that jumps in late, they don't do so well. I think the direct parallel to this would probably be a couple. One would be 1976. In 1976, it appeared that former Georgia Governor Jimmy Carter, who had actually declared his candidacy in December of 1974, right at the end of his governorship of Georgia, and spent a lot of time going up to New Hampshire, going up to Iowa. He had the peanut brigades. Mm-hmm. People would come out from Georgia, and they'd go door to door and then campaign for him. It appeared that he was going to win the nomination, and the Democratic Party, a lot of the high command of the Democratic Party, was trepidatious that there'd be somebody from outside of the establishment. So one person they convinced to run was Jerry Brown. And Jerry Brown had just been elected governor in 1974. He was a very new governor of California. He took over for Ronald Reagan, and he had an 84% job approval rating in California. So they said, this is the guy that's going to run. This is the guy that's going to take on Jimmy Carter. So he announced in essentially 1976 that he was going to be a candidate. This is after Iowa, after New Hampshire. He entered some late primaries, one in California, for example, but it was too late, and Carter basically steamrolled for the nomination. And the other person at that time was Frank Church. And Frank Church had become a notable figure nationally because he had led the hearings taking on essentially the Central Intelligence Agency and the NSA, and he had basically taken on the issue of how they had interfered in certain elections, for example, Iran in 1953, dislodging Mohammad Mossadegh and putting in the Shah. So he had gotten some national name recognition for that. But Jimmy Carter ended up winning the nomination that year. Now, there's one other example, though, where somebody didn't enter, and that was been 1992. And that was Mario Cuomo, the governor of New York. Polls showed that he was the front runner. And Mario Cuomo, December 21st, the last possible day to file in New Hampshire, Mario Cuomo was still making his decision whether to run or not, and he chose not to run. He literally had a plane that was going to bring him to New Hampshire to fill out the forms in New Hampshire, and he decided not to. And the reason he gave at the time was the burgeoning budget deficit, the fact that he had some challenges with the legislature in New York, the Republican-controlled legislature, and he wouldn't be able to get a budget off the ground. They're really having a budget showdown. So he said that's the reason that he did not run. There's always been speculation why he really didn't run that year. And you know, Mario Cuomo came to political note in 1984. He gave an address at the Democratic National Convention that really made him a national figure. 1988, some Democratic high command people wanted him to run. He didn't. 1992, people were looking. They said this was the year he's finally going to run, and he was ahead in the polls. But I think that part of the reason might have also been that he didn't think that he could win, in part because he saw that Bill Clinton was already in the race. And after Iowa and New Hampshire, the race was going to go south, and Bill Clinton was going to go to Georgia, where Bill Clinton was going to win, and then he was going to go to some of these southern states where he was very popular in places like South Carolina, North Carolina, Alabama, Mississippi, Florida. He'd already beaten Tom Harkin, the senator from Iowa, in a Florida straw poll. I don't think he wanted to be embarrassed there. And he also knew that the way the Democratic Party was going after having lost three elections in a row, that they wanted somebody who could be electable. And there was going to be an argument that the Clinton campaign was going to make against Cuomo, saying that the last thing we need is another Northeastern liberal. So he chose not to run. And 2 years down the road, he makes the unwise decision in a Republican year of running for re-election for his fourth term as governor of New York, and he loses to a little-known state senator named George Pataki. His political career was essentially over. So, you know, but they say he was, you know, Hamlet on the Hudson. He was just dithering, and finally decided he's not going to do it.
Oh, I like that's such a risky move. Sometimes you're really rolling the dice, and that's why some candidates you find really wait until they think is the right time to strike. They see that trend of their popularity continuing to rise, and they think it's going to rise forever. It's almost like someone in sports, and they're trying to figure out if they're going to sign a contract or if they should test free agency, and they're like, oh, no, I'm going to be good forever. Well, one torn ACL later, your value is nothing, and then you realize you should have gone through free agency. You know, it's almost like that with politicians in a way.
Oh, yes.
And they're trying to gauge, and I'm sure they got a ton of internal polling that tells them when the right time is and when the right time is not. And you saw that last time during when the Republicans were trying to figure out who to run for president, who are they going to put up against Barack Obama, you know, ultimately Mitt Romney for the last time around. But you found that there were some really high profile Republicans that were like, oh, don't worry, you'll come around next time. Like, you know, we'll get you next time. And, you know, the Chris Christie's of the world come to mind, where he held off, and he was like at his peak at that point, and they thought, oh, if Chris Christie were to run, you know, that would make big waves. Well, you know, he's pretty much cooked at this point, and I don't think he could have predicted all of those things at the same time. So it's weird to see the ups and downs of some of these politicians that decide not to run, thinking that their stock value is going to continue to rise. I don't know can you think of any candidates that decided not to run and their stock value rose?
Yes, actually. Bill Clinton would be a perfect example.
Oh, okay.
1987, he was seriously considering running for the presidential nomination that year. And finally, he had a meeting with Betsy Wright, his chief of staff in Arkansas, and they decided this wasn't the time for him to run. So he decided not to run that year. Then he ran again in 1992, and the timing was perfect. Part of the reason the timing was perfect was because George H.W. Bush had job approval ratings after the Gulf War at 91%. No president had ever exceeded that before. Mm-hmm. So as a result, you had all the people, all the major players that had a lot of name recognition, more so than Bill Clinton, decide not to run. You had Al Gore, who ran in 1988 for the nomination, who was seen as a possible pick for vice president with Mike Dukakis. He decided not to run. You had Dick Gephardt not running. Lloyd Benson didn't run. Jesse Jackson didn't run. Joe Biden didn't run. So you had all these major Democratic candidates saying, we're not going to run. They were saying, essentially, we'll wait. George H.W. Bush is going to get reelected. Then we'll beat Dan Quayle in 1996. So basically that left, in terms of Bill Clinton, they led him with a very weak field. You had Doug Wilder, the former governor of Virginia, who dropped out pretty early, or the governor at the time of Virginia. And then you had Tom Harkin, you had Bob Kerry, Jerry Brown, again running. And then you had Paul Tsongas and Larry Agron. And Clinton saw a very weak field, and he said, essentially, I can beat these guys and get the nomination. If I do run this time and don't win, I can potentially run again in 1996. But all the stars essentially lined up for him that year, because George H.W. Bush's approval rating, there was a huge downturn with the economy, and George H.W. Bush, because a lot of voters voted in the economy, was seen as kind of the tribune of that economy, and he was seen as being kind of out of touch in many respects. Then you had Pat Buchanan running against him for the nomination in 1992 for the Republican nomination, coming within about 20 points of beating him in New Hampshire. So his job approval rating went down, and then the people were saying, well, who's left? And essentially you had a very weak field, and Bill Clinton was able to win that weak field, in part because when Doug Wilder dropped out, he was the only Southern candidate there, so he was able to win that Super Tuesday. So that was an example of somebody who, I think, if he had run in 1987, 1988, he probably would not have won. He ran in the bright year in 1992, and he won.
Rich Rubino from American Politics on the Rocks. You can look up his blog as well. Just do a Google search for Rich Rubino. And there's a few things I want to talk to you after the break about. One thing I want to talk to you a little bit about conventions and how they use that. I got to say, one of the best jobs in politics, and at least one of the most secure jobs in politics, has to be polling for the Clintons, because I think they poll like crazy. And you've seen just the last couple of weeks, Hillary Clinton and Chelsea Clinton doing all of these television appearances, and people are again talking about, is she going to run? So I want to just get your general thoughts on Hillary Clinton perhaps kicking the tires and thinking about running again, and if that is something you think would even come, what are the odds of that even being successful? I mean, how many times do you see just, a candidate lose and then for example, in her own party to Barack Obama, come back, lose again? I mean, how many losses can you take before you call it a career? I want to ask you about that coming up next, if you can hold on.
Yes, absolutely.
Rich Rubino, our friend that we talk to every Monday on Overnight America. We'll continue our conversation on Overnight America, KMOX. His book is American Politics on the Rocks, and we check in with him on Mondays, author Rich Rubino. Thank you so much for sticking around.
Sure.
You know, I'm watching, and I did a quick little search on social media, and there's some breaking news that's happening this hour. Did you see the statement from Jimmy Carter?
No.
Okay, so here's the latest, and if you go to Jimmy Carter's Twitter page, they confirm this. So former President Jimmy Carter admitted to hospital for brain surgery. I guess they needed to relieve some pressure. So emergency surgery, he was admitted. And this was just released within the last 20 minutes. So we'll keep Jimmy Carter in our prayers. He's up. Was he 95 years old?
Yeah, 94, I believe. 94. The oldest living president.
Wow. So we'll hope for the best for him. And that certainly is not easy to go through a procedure like that at 94, 95, and
he's still building homes at 94 too.
Isn't that amazing? It really is. He just had a birthday a little bit ago, and I saw someone post online, "Happy birthday to Jimmy Carter, the inventor of the house." That's pretty funny.
You know, it's funny. He lives in a house that he actually built himself in 1966 that is assessed for less than $300,000.
Wow, how about that?
Which you can't say for a lot of presidents.
I know, that's just absolutely amazing.
Harry Truman was probably the last one who moved back to a modest house in Independence, Missouri, actually.
Oh, really?
That would have been the last president. Most of them, most of them tend to get, whether it's Reagan moving to Bel Air or Clinton moving to Chappaqua, New York, they tend to, George H.W. Bush to North Dallas, they tend to live in very opulent homes after they leave.
Or ranches. Like, there was a couple of high-profile people that made a lot of money. Like, Joe Paterno, for example, lived in the same house. Is it Warren Buffett that lives in the same house, too?
Yes, yes, yes. Yes.
Yeah. So there's some pretty high profile and very wealthy people that have the ability, if they wanted to, have a larger home, which is interesting. Of all those years Jimmy Carter was building homes through Habitat for Humanity and these different organizations, he's out there swinging hammers. It's not until the recent tiny home trend that people actually want to start building their own homes again. You know?
Yes, absolutely. I guess it's like that vicious circle. What goes in the ground, you know, comes around. You're going back to the other ebb of it, I guess. Now it's kind of the in vogue.
So it says here, former President Jimmy Carter was hospitalized on Monday for a procedure to relieve pressure on his brain caused by bleeding to his recent falls, a spokesperson said. So if there's any news on that tonight, we'll be sure to bring it up. But I just wanted to bring that up where we were speaking. So right before the break, we were talking about Michael Bloomberg and some of the late candidates that get into it. I wanted to talk to you about Hillary Clinton because she's been on television a lot lately. And a lot of times when you see the network TV appearances, it means they're trying to, you know, garner up some support. I just believe they're using this as an opportunity to fire up the polling machine to see if she's got what it takes to throw her hat back into the ring for 2020. Do you think Hillary Clinton is even a possibility to become a nominee for the Democratic Party this upcoming election?
A possibility, yes, simply because there are so many candidates and it's not like you need to, you know, get 40% in some of these states. But that being said, it would be a very hard case for her to make. I don't think she's going to do it, but it'll be a very hard case for her to make. If she becomes a nominee again, first of all, why in the last election, you know, she didn't go to Wisconsin, why she had so much trouble appealing to blue-collar voters. Those would be two huge issues that her opponents would certainly bring up against her. And I think Bernie Sanders would actually probably benefit him because he would make the argument that, you know, you essentially purloined the election from me last time because there are leaked emails that show that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who was chairman of the party at the time, who resigned, essentially was trying to rig the system for Hillary Clinton. Now, Hillary Clinton, there have been disputes about that, and there have been some reports that say that she would have won anyways, but I don't see where her base of support would necessarily come from, and she's going to have to explain that comment about calling, you know, half of Trump's supporters being part of the basket of deplorables. Mm-hmm. It would be very hard for her to do that. That being said, you know, you talk about, has there ever been somebody that's run three times and actually succeeded to the presidency? And the one I can think of is actually Ronald Reagan. He ran in 1968. Now, he basically, in 1968, he was kind of a very late entrant into the race. He was going around the country, barnstorming the country, giving speeches, but that wasn't necessarily for a presidential run. But when he got to the convention, he actually declared his presidential candidacy. He, just like Jerry Brown, he was a very newly elected governor of California, and he declared at the convention, but it didn't go anywhere. And he ran again in 1976 as an insurgent against Gerald Ford, and Gerald Ford beat him, but it was extremely close, and Gerald Ford won the first few primaries, and eventually Ronald Reagan, with the support of Jesse Helms, senator from North Carolina, very popular in the Republican hierarchy there, won the North Carolina primary. It came down to the convention, and Ford just barely eked it out. Then in 1980, Reagan garnered the nomination. But there's a lot more examples of candidates who have won the nomination and then tried again and has not been successful. The perfect example would be Hubert Humphrey. He ran in 1960, lost. 68, he got the nomination of the party. Then he ran again in 72, and he lost to George McGovern. And there have been examples of candidates who have run twice, certainly, who have actually gotten the party's nomination. Thomas E. Dewey ran in 44 and 48, lost both times, never ran again. L.A. Stevenson ran in 1952 and 1956. And at the convention, at the Democratic convention in 1960, Eugene McCarthy, the senator from Minnesota, and actually Eleanor Roosevelt as well, were trying to get him into the race, and they actually nominated him, but didn't go very far. And the other, there was one candidate, there were a few candidates, Henry Clay's one, but another one, William Jennings Bryan, the orator from South Platte, Nebraska. He went from Platte, Nebraska. He won the nomination in 1896, 1900, then in 1908, and after losing in 1908, the third time, he said, I think those fellows don't really want me in there.
You know, maybe the very first origin story of fake news was that headline, that Dewey defeats Truman.
Oh, yes, absolutely. There was another one, Missouri-oriented, too. There was a headline that said that John Kerry had picked Dick Gephardt as his running mate.
Oh, interesting. That didn't happen.
No, he picked John Edwards, but that actually did. And there was another one, too, that back in 1976, Mo Udall, basically later returns came and showed that Jimmy Carter had beat him. but there were returns at the time that showed that, Mo Udall had actually beat Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm.
And Mo Udall was essentially declaring victory. Then later on, it turned out that Jimmy Carter had actually won in Wisconsin. You know, Mo Udall that year called himself second place Mo, because every time he'd go, Jimmy Carter would win. Mo Udall comes in second. Mo Udall comes in second. Mo Udall comes in second. Finally, he thinks he'd won Wisconsin. Again, he comes in second. Mm-hmm. Later, he said part of the reason he lost was because he had the little people supporting him, and the little people couldn't reach the levers.
Yeah. Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. And I wanted to ask you about one other thing, and this is kind of off topic. I keep seeing on, because we keep the different news networks on the televisions, and I saw Hannity was doing a thing about Bernie Sanders and Ocasio-Cortez. To me, it's interesting that friendship that they drove up. You don't see that same sort of friendship with any of the other Democratic candidates. You know, you don't have, like, Joe Biden has someone under his wing that's out there to support him.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Elizabeth Warren doesn't have that. To me, it's a little bit interesting. It seems like he has a sidekick, and he's using that as a way to try to garner some support. I don't really see that all that often, or is that just unfair observation?
Well, I mean, there certainly have been people who have come, you know, certainly Granny D, I remember, in New Hampshire, for example, who was a campaign finance supporter, had went around with Mike Gravel when he was running for president in 2007, 2008, kind of her the sidekick in many respects. In the case of AOC, I mean, she is really a rock star with a lot of younger people in the Democratic Party. And she was some, you know, her support of Bernie Sanders, Sanders had supported her in the primary. We ran against Joe Crowley when no one expected her to win, and, you know, she won. And so she really, you know, owes a lot to Bernie Sanders. And I think by Bernie Sanders bringing her around in New Hampshire, bringing her around in Iowa, that's something that's really, I think, hurts potentially Elizabeth Warren, because there's nobody on the Democratic side that equals Elizabeth Warren. I mean, that equals, rather, what AOC, what her name recognition is, and what her support specifically to a lot of young people have is. But I will say that a lot of times there's a sidekick in the primaries. We talk about in 1992, for example, part of the reason Bill Clinton won Georgia is he had the very popular governor, Zell Miller. Hmm. And Zell Miller would go all around the state with him. And Zell Miller was kind of showing that, you know, that he was almost giving like his stamp of approval. So you have that example where people, John Lynch, another example, very popular former governor of New Hampshire, goes everywhere he does sometimes campaign with Joe Biden as kind of a sidekick, I guess. So you do have that, but you're right. In case of AOC, as soon as you hear the name AOC, you know, people, it's a rock star status. A lot of people don't like her. The people that don't like her are probably not voting, voting in the Democratic primary. And if they are voting in the Democratic primary, if they don't like her, she's probably a non-factor to her anyway. So, But there are examples when people will. Ted Williams, for example, would go around sometimes with George W. Bush in 2000. And you have rock stars, Bon Jovi, for example, if Bon Jovi goes with a Democratic candidate. But there's really nobody that reaches her star power.
Forgot about Bon Jovi going around. Well, I guess President Trump in the last election brought around Chris Christie a lot. He had, like, when he was in Indiana, he had the former coach, the Indiana basketball coach, Bobby Knight.
Yeah,
he was traveling with him. And there's a couple of other people like that you'd see pop up every once in a while. But normally, you think it's the conventions that bring out the celebrities or the different names. And those are the ones that really, they're trying to fill as much stage time as they can. So they bring up some people that might grab some attention in that sense. So again, if people wanted to look you up online, where can they find your blog?
Just go www.polita-geek.com.
Polita-geek.com. And Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. Every time I look you up online, you're doing another speech somewhere. There's always these great photos of you speaking to different groups. You're a busy guy.
Yes, indeed.
I love
indeed.
Seeing
well,
that.
The election season never ends.
No, it never ends. When's the next debate? I forgot to look that up. Do you know?
I believe it's November 18th.
Oh, wow. It's really close. That's next week.
I believe
week.
It's coming up, but the next one I know is going to be in Atlanta.
Is that a week from today, November 18th?
I think it is. I believe it's coming up.
Wow. Let's see.
I believe it's...
Yeah, everything you need to know about the next Democratic debate. 5 hours ago, Washington Post put something out about that, so I guess they were thinking about it, too. Okay, coverage Wednesday, November 20th.
20th, okay. It's 20th, okay.
So it's next Wednesday, not next Monday, next Wednesday in Atlanta. And it looks like it's going to be a Washington Post MSNBC debate. And there's, let's see, how many people? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 people confirmed right now. I guess it's too late to add someone in. Or maybe they're not too late.
It would have to be a heroic action to get somebody else in there, I think, right now.
I think they'd make room if Hillary Clinton said she wanted to jump in.
Yes, or Michelle Obama. There's always that, you know, pipe dream for some Democrats.
Oh,
but I don't think I don't think that's happening.
You don't hear her name. Every time her name comes up, they include her in polling, and she always polls very strong. So I think it's more of a wish than it is a realistic opportunity.
Well, I'll still say this one other person. There's some report today that former Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick, who had said earlier this year that he wasn't going to run, is now seriously considering running again. He's at least throwing that trial balloon out there.
Trial balloon. I like that, I like that term. I do. If you're working at the Washington Post, I'm looking at their website right now, and they have these drawings of each of the candidates, these cartoon drawings, and they look really neat. I mean, they're the artistic value of them. But I can imagine if you're the artist that did that, and then all of a sudden someone else jumps in, you're thinking to yourself, oh, great, now that I got to do another one.
You gotta put their little their head in there somewhere just to be at least historically accurate.
Yeah. Okay. American Politics on the Rocks. You can find it on Amazon. Rich Rubino, our guest every Monday. Thank you so much for coming on to Overnight America.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me on.
And he joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line. Oh, I love when Rich joins us on Mondays. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. We keep getting updates on Jimmy Carter through the now CBS News contributor David Angus. So it says President Jimmy Carter hospitalized Monday night ahead of a procedure to relieve pressure on his brain. That, according to the Carter Center, which released a statement on the former president's health, says the center says Carter will undergo surgery at Emory University Hospital on Tuesday. 95 years old, is said to be resting comfortably. That's not an easy procedure at 95 years old.
What you worry is that if you drain that blood, there could be more bleeding. And so I don't think we're out of the wood after the procedure at all. And he's going to be followed very closely, again, given his previous medical history and given his age. But the same thing, we would do this to anybody who had a fall and had a slow bleed.
You know, it says something about keeping yourself active into your years well after retirement. I mean, he was a president of the United States. He could have just enjoyed the rest of his life. He didn't have to keep building homes or volunteering or doing what, you know, he didn't have to write a memoir. He didn't have to continue teaching. He could have just attended his church and been just a person that was able to enjoy that side of life. But he continued and continued to work hard. It's hard to learn your boundaries and your limitations after you've been so active for so many years. I find that with a lot of the different people I've met that happen to be close to his age, you know, above the age of 90. How many times have you had a parent or a family member or someone that you were really close to, you've had to tell them, you know, you're not young anymore. You can't keep doing this. You're going to hurt yourself. But at the same time, that's the thing, the motivation, that sort of love of whatever they're doing, that's what's keeping them alive. That's the thing that keeps them motivated to get up and keep moving. It was like that with my grandma for many years, too. You kept saying, no, you're going to hurt yourself. You can't do that. But that was the thing that kept pushing them through. So we'll hope for the best for Jimmy Carter, and he comes out of this, and we'll get hopefully good news tomorrow after that procedure and that everything went well. American honors their men and women who have served in the U.S. military today. Hillary Lane is in New York with President Trump, who attended the nation's largest Veterans Day celebration.
President Trump and the First Lady pay tribute to veterans who have served in the nation's armed forces at a soldiers' memorial in New York's Madison Square Park.
The greatest warriors to ever walk the face of the earth.
The president addressed the crowd gathered for the city's 100th Veterans Day parade. He's the first commander-in-chief to kick off the annual event.
The men and women who have donned our nation's uniforms are the bravest, toughest, strongest, and most virtuous warriors ever to walk on earth.
More than 25,000 people, including veterans and active duty military personnel, are marching along Fifth Avenue.
Oh, so that was a report from CBS News. And I found a couple of different stories, some Veterans Day stories, which we're going to cover through the course of the show tonight. And I also felt like I wanted to play one of my favorite patriotic songs, one that, you know, you hear it on 4th of July and you hear it on Memorial Day, but there's something to be said about the people that take their love for country the step further, and they would put their lives behind that country. And the few and the many that who have done that, God love you.
Oh, beautiful, far heroes proved in liberating strife. Who more than self, their country loved. Singing something like this. Listen here. Oh, beautiful, far spacious skies, far amber waves of grain, far purple mountain majesties. Wait a minute, I'm talking about America, sweet America. You know, God done shed his grace on thee. He crowned thy good. Yes, he did. Heavy brotherhood.
We're going to talk a little bit more about what's happening this week on Capitol Hill. You know, the anonymous whistleblower that's not so anonymous. What's going to happen between the Republicans and Democrats? Procedurally speaking, I have some questions for our friend Brad Young, who's going to join us at the start of next hour. And we'll take some of your calls on this impeachment hearing, too. Here's the number if you want to text in during the break. 314-436-7900. Or 800-925-1120 is the number to call in. You can always tweet at me, at Ryan Recker. And on top of that, too, make this your favorite podcast. Listen to us wherever you are. Here's the podcast address. KMOX.com/ONA. Find us on your favorite podcasting app. Happy Veterans Day to all who have served. And your love has not gone unnoticed. It's Overnight America.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.